just like the Lord, so very much like Jesus.
This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Good morning. Thank you for being here, faithful to the Lord. This is, as we all know, the first Sunday when, in this part of our state, the COVID-19 lockdown has been lifted to permit this number of people to meet together in one large room. Thank you for your faithfulness during this time of testing. This is a wonderful attendance this morning. After our getting out of the habit and just being out of the rhythm. There is a rhythm, there is a habit. As the old Methodist used to say, there is a method to serving the Lord. Before we read a verse of Scripture, because I can't possibly remember to qualify and put in perspective everything I'm going to try to say today, when it seems later in the message that I get tough, I want you to remember this part. I'm going to get tough about pop psychology and how pop psychology is destroying Western culture. But before I get there, I want you to know that I believe in helping people. I believe in helping people who are hurting and disadvantaged, perhaps between jobs, perhaps fresh to the United States of America. I just believe in helping people. And Wednesday, I had my agenda all set. I just knew what the Lord had for David Atkinson for Wednesday, and I needed to get it done. Because I still don't have our little office slash media room organized in our new little place. And I still have got to get that little media office here organized. So everything was supposed to happen this way. But I needed to go up to Best Buy to buy an inexpensive item of electronics to help finish setting up the sound system. And so I'm rushing there, and I enter the plaza up there near Best Buy, and I turn a corner, and I see a man with dark skin, not African American, not Native American, not from India, but I saw a man. His wife was sitting on the ground, and I didn't see, first of all, how many children were sitting in the grass under the shade. It was 90-something. And so they had chosen a place by the curb under a shade tree. But then I saw the sign. Father of four children, no job, please help. Well, it was one of the main arteries into the plaza, and You know the one that sometimes perches on your shoulder and whispers in your ear when you need to obey the Lord and reach out to people? Well, you know, I've got to get to Best Buy, but halfway between when I saw them and when I got to park outside of Best Buy, I said, Lord, I will. If they're still there when I get this little cord, I will. And so I got the cord, went back, and I parked inside the parking lot per se that had some rather large trees in front of it. I wanted to park there so that they wouldn't see me coming, and I only had $6 in my wallet. I don't carry much cash because I may lose my wallet. I have been known to lose my wallet, and it's one thing to give money away. It's another thing to be so dumb that you let someone steal it. So I parked behind that row of tall trees and got my $6 out and a John and Romans with the name of the Dyer Baptist Church on it, and my little track, Lord, Liar, or Lunatic, and another track, The Bridge, and I stepped out from between those tree bushes and crossed the street, and then I saw him close up. I think perhaps they were gypsies. I'm not sure. But they're from Romania. And I immediately thought of the Stevens. I thought of the Stevens who served as our missionaries in Romania, first to gypsies and then in Bucharest. And I said, where's your home? They said, America. And his English was pretty good. Really was. I had no problem understanding. America. And I said, I mean, where did you come from? America is our home. But I said, where was your home before you came to America? Romania. I said, were you close to Bucharest? And she said, 2 hours away, 2 hours away. So I said, what is your name? I've not heard this version, so I had to ask him to say it a couple of times. He said, Marvina. Marvina. I said, oh, my middle name is Mervyn. He said, same name, just difference between English and Romanian. Mervyn, Marvina, same thing. So we talked. I left my witness with him, came home, and got 2 bags of groceries. I don't like giving cash, really. I don't like getting cash. It isn't particularly wise. They can spend it on booze, drugs, to deepen their hole. But I came back here and got 2 sacks of groceries and went back, and they were gone. And I was very sad. I wanted to reach out. I believe in helping people. And some people have had a series of difficulties. And we'd open up our bowels or our innards, our inner motivations of compassion, and we're trying to help people. How are we going to witness to people if we don't try to help them? Now, having said that, I ask you please to join me in Ephesians 6:4. Ephesians 6:4. The verse is known, well known to many of us. You may keep your seats and let's just read Ephesians 6:4 together. Together, the first word is and. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but by way of contrast, bring them up, lift them up, point them heavenward, bring them up. Depravity takes us low, right? Depravity takes us low. And if we're going to be brought up, if we're going to be lifted toward heaven, there's going to have to be an intervention. You hear about these interventions for those who are addicted to drugs or porn. Often there has to be an intervention. Well, God must intervene and change our sinful lives from the pattern with which we're born, or we're sunk. An intervention. So here it is said that fathers are to intervene and not leave the children to their own natural impulses. Humanistic education says, oh, just leave the little darlings alone. Leave the little darlings alone. And there's a spark of God, in everybody. If you just let them throw silly putty against the wall and mark all the walls up with crayon. Just leave the little darlings alone and they'll naturally evolve upwards. No, they won't. That is secular humanism. That is evolution. There must be an intervention. And one of the ones who is intervene is a father. Bring them up. Lift them heavenward. Lift them from where they're naturally inclined to go. Bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. It comes no surprise to any of you who have known me for any length of time that I was not a perfect father. I repeat, this won't surprise you. I was not a perfect father. I began my ministry in that era, late 1960s, all the way through the 1970s, right on into the 1980s. I began my ministry as a church planter in that era that taught that model ministry was to have a fast-growing church. And the more statistics you could get in 6 months, the better. I became a Baptist, came into our circles when it was the case that churches were listed in a major publication according to the number of baptisms they had per year. I was brought into this movement in the era of super statistics, and that was to be the measure of success of both the local church and the pastor. I have no excuse. I'm simply telling you that's the climate into which I came when we became Baptists when I was about 25. Let me say to you, emphatically, without apology, that philosophy was toxic to many. It was toxic to many. And there are many young people who won't darken the door of a Baptist church because their parents were always gone trying to help the preacher get the statistics up. I meet these now 40-year-olds by the dozens from California to New Jersey and from Canada to Florida. They just checked out. And there were times when I should have been with our children, and I wasn't. And that's my fault. And the fact that by the grace of God, both of our children are in full-time service. Our daughter overseeing hundreds of children in a church. The fact that both our children are in full-time Christian service is more a credit to God and their mother than it is to me. They both are in full-time Christian service because of the grace of God and the ministry of their mother. Fathering can be cause for regrets and grief. I repeat, fathering can be cause for regrets and grief. Genesis 26:35 tells us that Esau, the son, caused his father Isaac grief of mind. Yes, being a father can be cause for grief. Esau caused his father grief of mind. But by exhilarating contrast, fathering can be cause for rejoicing and gladness. Fathering can be cause for great rejoicing and gladness. The Apostle John said, I have no greater joy than to see my children walk in truth. Fathering can be cause for regrets, but fathering can also be cause for great rejoicing. Genesis 37:3-11 tells us that Jacob loved Joseph. Fathering can be cause of rejoicing. Jacob loved Joseph, and the father Jacob respected his 16 or 17-year-old son Joseph so much that the Bible is that the father Jacob observed or took note of his son Joseph saying. Now that's something, isn't it? When a father had such respect, Jacob had such respect for his 16, 17-year-old son that he observed or took note of the things that Joseph said. They're not here today. I suppose they'll be watching, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Our pastor and his family are aware. They're away. I just happened to be present, and it was a great situation of joy and compliment. Someone, I don't remember whether it was here or somewhere else, and someone said to Russell, the oldest son of the four children, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do now that you're taller? You're taller than your father. What are you going to do now? And Russell immediately responded, it doesn't matter how tall I get, I'll always be looking up to my father. I'm saying Jacob respected his son Joseph and noted, observed what he said as a 17-year-old. So fathering can be a cause of great rejoicing. Consider with me then today a father's rejoicings. A father's rejoicings. Proverbs 3:12 tells us that a son or a daughter can be a source of delight to his or her father. Children, look at me. Children, you can be a source of delight to your father. Instead of causing him to be sad and grieve in his mind when he has to work all day to put bread on the table, you children can be a source of delight to your father. Do you understand? When he comes home from work, you can make his day. Run to the door and say, "Welcome home, Daddy. I missed you. Welcome home." You children can be a source of delight and rejoicing to your father. And do it. Just do it. Now, you teenagers, I understand in this anti-authority culture, and now you cut it out. Don't get me going on this. It's your fault. It's all your fault that I want to talk about this anti-authority culture. I know that this anti-authority culture, with the secular humanism from many of the public schools, say, well, you know, it's all right to call him the old man. No, it's not all right to call him the old man. He is your father. He is your father. Children can do the most delightful things. Even the prayers of a child can warm a father's heart. Last week, I'm not going to say who it was, and I'm not trying to embarrass the family. I loved it. I just loved it. It seemed like so long ago, but I think it was just last Sunday. So much has happened this week, but I was over with the other group and some of the smaller children over there last Sunday, and I was going to go like this. I was going to go like this, but the little fella put his hand up as a gentleman, and I put my hand up, and he said, "You're getting old." Now, why could he say that? He could say that because I'm getting old. And children say, as Art Linkletter used to prove. Children can say the most delightful things. And even the prayers of a child can delight and warm a father's heart. You may be familiar with this little poem that is whimsical because it is so typical. Think of your own child at prayer. Little boy kneels at the foot of his bed, droops on his little hands his little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. God bless mommy. I know that's right. Wasn't it fun in the bath tonight? The cold so cold and the hot so hot. Oh, yes, God bless daddy. I quite forgot. If I open my fingers a little bit more, I can see Nanny's dressing gown on the door. It's a beautiful blue, but it hasn't a hood. Oh, God bless Nanny and make her good. Mine has a hood, and when I lie in bed, I pull the hood up over my head, and I pull up the covers and curl up small, and nobody knows that I'm there at all. Thank you, God, for a lovely day. Now, what was the rest I had to say? I said, bless Daddy. So, what can it be? Oh, now I remember. God bless me. Little boy kneels at the foot of his bed, drops on his little hands his little gold head. Hush, hush, whisper who dares. Christopher Robin is saying his prayers. Children can be such a joy and such a delight. Observe with me, please, Proverbs 23:24. Let's turn there. Proverbs 23:24. Proverbs 23 and 24. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice. We're talking about the rejoicings of a father. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice. And he, it is masculine, he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. Remember also that both Proverbs 10:1 and Proverbs 15:28 say, a wise son maketh a glad father. A wise son maketh a glad father. All right, young men. Are you making your father glad? Are you? Wise sons and wise daughters make their father glad. Or are you making your father sad? It's one or the other. Are you making your father glad? So this is the first truth we see about a father's rejoicings. A father will rejoice when his child is wise. And I'm trying to put my beady eyes on all you children, both sons and daughters. A father will rejoice when his child is wise. This is an age, it's an age of existentialism, when what is celebrated is how you feel. How you feel? I'll try to be discreet here, but I'm going to deal with the campuses of this nation and even the high school campuses of this nation. So if you feel like being immoral, just go ahead and be immoral. It's existentialism. It's getting your jollies out of the experience of the moment, whether it's forbidden or permitted in the Bible. And wisdom is downplayed. Just enjoy life. Eat, drink, be merry, have a party. And oh, I could say so much more after the last 2 weeks. Hey, what I'm praying for America is revival. White, red, yellow, black, white, revival. is the only answer. And not a form of godliness. There's I love Jesus, and then walks around living like the devil. A father will rejoice when his child is wise. And the fathers of America and Western culture need to get back to emphasizing wisdom. The scriptures have a large role for wisdom. Now right here, and I told you we were going to get here. Right here, early in this first point, and there'll only be two today. Right here at the beginning of this first point, I must take a definite issue. That means I disagree with. I take definite issue with and disagree with contemporary Freudianism. His name was Sigmund Freud. I disagree with Freudianism, and I disagree with the irresponsible victim mentality that has swept over Western culture like a plague. Yes. One's environment does not have to be the determining factor. I'm going to say it again. One's environment does not have to be the determining factor in my life, but I can let it. Consider how Joseph excelled in pagan Egypt. Egypt was virtually totally unknown to Joseph, but he excelled in a pagan culture. Virtually everything Joseph stood for, Egypt and the Pharaoh were against. And consider how Daniel thrived in decadent, hostile Babylon. Environment does not have to be the determining factor. Wisdom should be the determining factor. And you can learn to be wise even if your father's IQ is not at the top. I'm going to say it again. You can learn to be wise even if your father has an IQ that is not at the top. I refuse to seriously consider any other philosophy than what I'm advocating. A father rejoices when his child is wise. The faculty of wisdom is neither genetic or inherited. I repeat, in probably 97% of the cases, the faculty of wisdom is neither genetic or inherited. I hope that I'm a little wise. But even if I am a little wise, Lee didn't just automatically inherit wisdom from my genes. He sweat and he cleaned toilets in the process of getting wise. The book of Proverbs and the entire Bible gives witness to the fact that wisdom is not an inherited quality. Wisdom is a learned quality. Everybody here can learn to be wise. It is a learned faculty. And don't you just cop out by saying, well, I can't learn. Yes, you can. The strategic lives and leadership of Dr. Ben Carson, who I believe is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Affairs, the strategic lives of Dr. Ben Carson and Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina offer sterling proof that it's not genetic. Wisdom can be learned. And when wisdom is learned by a child, the father's heart rejoices and is glad. It is my understanding that both Dr. Ben Carson and Senator Tim Scott grew up without having a father in the home. They made up their mind they were going to bring glory to God. First 1 Samuel 18, verses 5, 14, and 15, all tell us that the 16 or 17-year-old shepherd youth, David, behaved himself wisely at 16 or 17. David behaved himself wisely. Many of you know the account. Young David behaved himself so wisely that he eventually replaced a very tall, imposing leader by the name of Saul. We're not told that David was tall. Saul was a head and shoulders above the average man. David replaced him because David behaved himself wisely. Now come on, young people. Come on, young people. Choose wisdom. Choose wisdom. It's a deliberate choice. You have to make a pun. You have to put your mind to it. You have to determine that you're going to seek wisdom and cherish wisdom as fine gold. Did you ever wonder how much of David's wise behavior his father Jesse lived to see? I'm going to repeat that. Did you ever wonder how much of David's wise behavior his father Jesse lived to see? A wise son maketh a glad father. How much of David's wisdom did his father Jesse live to see? The biblical record, plug this in. The biblical record tells us that Jesse was already an old man. Jesse, the father, was already an old man when David, the youngest, was pointed out and anointed, and Jesse was already an old man when God used David to kill Goliath. He was already old when David was just starting his life's calling. We can read about that in 1 Samuel 16 and 1 Samuel 17, 12. And then we're going to come to the other end of the life of Jesse, the father. Jesse disappears from the account after David, a very grateful son. Jesse disappears from the scene after David, a grateful son, very lovingly and considerately put both his parents under the watch care and the protection of the king of Moab. Saul was trying to wipe out David's whole family. And Saul would have loved to be able to kill David's parents. And David took his parents to the king of Moab, and he left them there for asylum or protection. And that's the last we read of Father Jesse. David makes arrangements for his father and his mother. That's the last we read of Jesse. So he didn't get to see all that wise behavior that David demonstrated throughout his reign and on. He didn't get to see it, but he got to see enough of it that his heart was glad because he saw his boy behaving wisely. Now, okay, I'll just say a few things, finish the first point, and we'll be done. By stark contrast, Proverbs 17:25 declares that a foolish son is a grief to his father. A foolish son is a grief to his father, even as we have seen that Esau was a grief to Isaac. Well, here's a question. We'll put a practical handle on this, and I'll finish. Here comes the application, the practical handle. How can we at least try to rear wise children? Now, if they reject it, then you've done the best you can. But let us as fathers be sure that at least we tried. We tried to rear wise children. Well, how? We must first teach our children that the absolute criterion for everything in life is the glory of God. That's what they need to be taught first. Even before they can read the Bible, they need to be taught that the criterion, which is the glory of God, must always come first. And if this cannot glorify God, then we don't do it. That's the foundation. Then there's prayer. And they can learn to pray even before they can read. Teach them to pray. Then there's Bible reading. The wisdom literature, as that section of scripture is called. Wisdom literature. The wisdom books. Proverbs. And though it's pretty depressing, Ecclesiastes. Because it teaches us how not to arrange our priorities. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. We need to teach our children to read the wisdom literature of the Bible. I understand we have the children here today. I understand we have the teenagers. But a Christian daddy worth his salt at a certain point in his son's life ought to teach him what a strange woman looks like. A daddy worth his salt ought to teach his son at an appropriate age not to go to certain areas of Cal City. Come on! Well, I just think he'll find it out on his own. Oh, don't be such a coward. Talk to him. Tell him. Teach him. Well, I just think he'll just sort of evolve. Here we are. We don't evolve upward. We all, left to our own, evolve downward. Teach. Model the thinking process before your children. Model it. This, the alternative, that, this, that, pros, cons, short-range consequences, long-range consequences. And the long-range consequences kick in with respect to the strange woman. Teach them how to evaluate. How are they going to know? Certainly not through some video. And ask them questions. Ask them questions. All of this teaching I'm talking about should be implemented by asking questions. I'm almost done. An accusation hardens the will, but a question pricks the conscience. An accusation or a statement hardens the will of the child, but a question pricks the conscience. David, whom I have bragged on earlier, David himself defaulted in this matter of asking conscience-arousing questions. David blew it with respect to his son Adonijah. In 1 Kings 1, 6a, regarding the rebel son Adonijah, the record is, and Adonijah's father David had not displeased or corrected or checked Adonijah in his behavior by saying to him at any time, "Why hast thou done so?" David just did not ask questions that could prick the conscience. He just didn't ask conscience questions. "Where were you last night? I think I heard the door at 1:30. Who were you with?" It's part of fathering. God is our Heavenly Father. When Adam and Eve rebelled in the Garden of Eden, God the Father, watch it, look it up. When Adam and Eve rebelled in the garden, God the Father started the discipline by asking four questions. Not statements, not accusations. He asked four probing, conscience-arousing questions. Where are you, Adam? Where? Who told you you were unclothed, Adam? Who told you? Number three, have you eaten of the tree? And number four, what is this that thou hast done? Four questions. God, the Father, with the first rebels. When our children violate, I think we should early on say, did you think about this before you did it? Did you think about it? How long did you think about this? Did you think about the consequences? Did you think about the long-range consequences? And not just the short-term jollies. Did you think? Sometimes our children will give an excuse. Well, Dad, I thought. Well, the truth is, they didn't think at all. They just gave in to the body. Well, Dad, I thought. No, you didn't think very long. And you surely didn't consider the consequences. As we encourage our children to become wise by giving God the glory, praying, reading the Bible as soon as they can read, learning to consider the pros, the cons, the short-range consequences, the long-range consequences, analyzing, mulling it over in the mind. As we do all of those things, we're contributing as fathers to our own rejoicing heart. A wise son rejoices his father. I do hope, as I close with this illustration, that you will forgive me for being so personal. Lee prays all the time that I will finish well. And he needs to pray that. And I need your prayer that I will finish well. So I know that Lee also needs to finish well. And I know he hasn't finished yet. And so we all need to pray for our pastor. He's human. But I'm coming to this. One of our staff members said to me, the two of us were alone. One of our staff members said to me, oh, it's at least 2 years ago, I like to watch Lee work with their children. I like how Lee works with their children. I didn't do that as well as I should have. He's a teacher. You teachers will understand the teaching method. But for me, I would just assume that if Lee watched me with a wrench, Lee would just pick it up by osmosis. But Lee doesn't work that way. He gets down on his knees with Russell and Chase, and he takes their hand, and he says, now, you put your hand on the wrench this way. Now be careful it doesn't slip and hit you in the teeth. You put it here and you exert the pressure this way. That's how we teach what we call wisdom. Hands on. Turn off some of the sports. Turn off some of Fox News. Get down on your knees and demonstrate The teachers do that when they teach writing. Thank you, teachers. This stroke down this way. Put the ball over here. We've got to teach our children if they are to become wise.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.